here's a story from The World.
The ceasefires in the South Caucasus, where Europe meets Asia, are not holding. Russia has brokered two ceasefire deals, then the U.S. tried, but the fighting in Nagorno-Karabakh between Azerbaijan and Armenia continues. Hundreds of people have been killed and thousands displaced since the conflict flared up late last month. Now both sides are blaming each other for violating the latest truce. From the Armenian capital, Yerevan, Andrew Connolly reports.
Armenia's capital city is hundreds of miles from the battlefields of Nagorno-Karabakh, but the mobilization of society to support the war effort is very visible here. On Saturday morning in a downtown school, classrooms are full of women of all ages ripping and weaving fabric. They're making camouflage nets for the troops. Meryem Magarian started volunteering after her brother was drafted.
I guess they use for soldiers, like small ones, and the big ones for tanks, and also for that big like machines. A lot of people, they take medicine and food and whatever is needed for the soldiers, like by themselves. So they are like volunteers doing that job, and they need to cover their cars as well.
The Armenian government says it's lost about 1,000 troops in the fighting. The real number of deaths is likely much higher. With a population of just 3 million, many families in this country are dealing with the loss of loved ones. Meryem, too.
I lost my friends. But, you know, we don't have time to cry.
This is a jarring scene for a visitor. Tiny chairs, kids' artwork on the classroom walls with the busy work of assembling military accessories. Irina Minassian is a local parent, and I ask her,
do they understand what's going on?
Maybe not very well and deep understanding, but they have friends already who passed away because we have a student. It's not easy to speak about it, but he graduated a year ago, and we had a funeral last week, and it's very difficult. And all of us have brothers, friends, and it's affected everyone.
The Armenian capital is very much part of this conflict. Fresh troops and supplies leave here, heading to the front lines, while tens of thousands of refugees from Nagorno-Karabakh are arriving in Yerevan. On the city's outskirts, a spacious Soviet-era community centre has been turned into a transit facility for mothers, children and the elderly. Manager Haik Muradian is with the Ministry of Labour and Social Affairs. Some of these people have lost houses in the bombing, he says. Some are traumatized, but all of them are sure they'll go back home as soon as we win the war. And he adds, we will definitely win. Many refugees arrive here with just the clothes on their back. Henrik Hakobian wanders through the lines of camp beds in a denim jacket and camouflage baseball cap. He says he fled his village of Tol a week ago. Henrik, who tells me he's 80 years old, had to evacuate quickly. He says he had to leave everything behind, money, clothes, farm animals, even his passport. Thousands of people have been killed and displaced, Henrik says. So why is the world silent? As the conflict enters its second month, the anger is apparent on the streets of Yerevan. Last week, thousands of people marched to the headquarters of the United Nations, calling for action. 30-year-old Seda Manassian works at a hotel, but left to join the protesters.
You know, it's impossible. I can't stay at my office because human beings are dying. There are strict violations. And I'm patriot, and I can't see how the destinies are ruined. Destinies are ruined. Soldiers that you see, they are not in Armenian military service. One more important point. It is obligatory for all. It's not their choice. So 18, 19, 20-year-old boys were just students, and they have to do military service. They have their dreams. They have their... Most of them have very good professions, but they are dying. It's not they chose to be a soldier. They have to protect, defend. Armenia defends.
For some Armenians, this isn't their first experience with war. Elena Dadayan Romanova's family was driven out of Azerbaijan by fighting in the 1980s. Then, 3 decades later, they fled the shelling in Stepanakert, the de facto capital of Karabakh. Now she's in a rented apartment in Yerevan with her daughter, elderly father-in-law, and 5 grandchildren.
We heard the first explosions early in the morning. We thought it might be military training. But then we went out on the balcony and we saw the smoke rising, so we headed for the basement. 2 days later, volunteers from Yerevan came to the border to collect us. My daughter didn't want to leave, but I told her, I've seen this before. I know how this goes. And I forced her to come with me.
I asked her how long she expects to be here in the Armenian capital.
We don't have any idea when we'll be able to go back. 1 month? 2 months? We don't have any plans, and we can't make any plans. All of our thoughts and prayers right now, they're with our husbands and our brothers.
After 4 straight weeks of heavy military losses and devastated civilian areas, Armenians still say they're not giving up. 3 ceasefire agreements have failed to end the fighting. And now, an emerging refugee crisis, with a resurgence of COVID-19 cases, the region looks set to be entering a long and troubling winter. For The World, I'm Andrew Connolly in Yerevan.